Yeah, we all good to go.
Go. Commence speaking.
Have you settled on what you want to say, Brendan?
Yeah, I guess so.
Okay.
But it's going to be a loose one. It's going to be loose. It's also going to be short so that we can go watch Jamie. Yeah.
That's fine. These are mini episodes. I'm fine with keeping them mini.
Yeah. Do you think we have enough?
Yeah, probably.
We're really just running out the clock until we could watch Dustin and the Gang. Hello there, and welcome to Why Did We Watch This? Back with a mini episode this week. I am Chris Ravel.
I'm Brendan Drischler.
And I'm Lee Delahanty.
And we're not doing a full movie this week, obviously. As our mini episodes, we typically have a quick discussion that we're going to get through.
That was real subtle. It's typically always 15 minutes, as you well know.
But before we get to that, we are going to announce the movie we're going to be doing in 2 weeks, and that is going to be Constantine.
Constantine.
Woo! That's our movie for November, starring Keanu Reeves.
And by Francis Lawrence.
Who's the little kid? Is it Shia?
Shia LaBeouf.
Shia. It is Shia.
Yeah.
Shia. Rachel Weisz.
Peter Stormare.
Tilda Swinton.
Gavin Rossdale.
I forgot that Gavin Rossdale was in that.
Yep.
Yeah.
It was like pre-divorce. And as always, we have a drink to go with it. And so we have come together with the Holy Shotgun, which is Tanteo Jalapeno Tequila, Campari Agave Nectar, and a lemon garnish.
Mm-hmm.
And we're pretty excited to drink that, or at least 2 out of 3 of us are.
Ain't bad. Mm-hmm. Maybe I won't be disgusting. Yeah. I don't know.
Maybe it won't
be. I had it at an airport.
Oh.
I just stole this recipe wholesale from that time when I was stuck in an airport.
Sometimes we like things that other people don't like.
No, we don't.
It's true. Yeah. So that'll be exciting. I'm excited to watch that movie again because I always really enjoy it. And it's also really hard, guys, to find a movie that's even remotely November-y.
Who cares,
so this
though?
Is where
yeah.
we landed.
Thanksgiving sucks.
Yeah, there's not really...
Can I just get that out there?
Yeah, it does suck. I agree with you. Thanksgiving is a bullshit holiday. I don't care for it. Like, even beyond, like, the, you know, sociological implications of celebrating, you know, what led to a genocide, I just don't care about the holiday.
The food's all terrible.
Yeah.
I gotta see my awful family.
See, you should have been like me and
is this a
several
test?
States away from home.
Is this a test to see if any of them are listening?
They know. They know what I think about them.
Yeah.
My parents know
she
that...
She says it in that letter she sends to Mark every weekend.
My parents and my brother know that I like them and that I hate having to go at any gathering that consists of any more than them.
But anyway, so I guess happy future Thanksgiving to us all.
Sure.
So we are discussing tonight... what we kind of has come to refer to as weak spots, things that you are very weak for that could be in movie or in TV that even if it is the largest pile of garbage, you're probably kind of interested in seeing that movie because it has this one thing.
Yeah.
It's an archetype, it's an element, it's a kind of character, all of that kind of stuff. So who wanted to start with
someone
theirs?
Who isn't me, because I feel like I'm not very good at this.
Chris, I think you're probably the most emblematic, at least in terms of, like, what we've seen.
Sure.
Yeah.
And
well,
what tends to come up in discussions a lot in our podcast.
And I was thinking, you know, it's no mystery to all fives of you listeners of this podcast that I love a ridiculous woman in ridiculous clothing.
I feel like that is verbatim what you said in Stepford Wives at one point.
Probably.
I love ridiculous.
I mean, honestly,
ridiculous
because
clothing.
It's come up so often,
yeah.
like similar, we've struck on like
similar wording,
trademark
probably.
Phrasing for it.
Yeah,
that we can easily like. I don't have to think about it to say that anymore because like it does come up so often.
I can think of many times you guys have also said to me like, "Oh, you're going to love this part. There's a ridiculous woman in it." And I'm like, "Okay, you're correct." I mean, I like many other things, and I think you know you get. There's, like, a list of things that will end up attracting you. Like, Lee's kind of giving me shit before by being attracted to any movie that involves a mentally ill woman.
Yeah.
I wasn't giving you shit, but it is a little bit. It's just a pattern I've noticed.
It is.
Now, Chris.
But.
I have my little pad of paper. Why don't you lie down on my couch?
Okay.
And now why don't you tell me why you think you're this way? Why do you think these things appeal to you, Chris?
I mean...
Pay no attention to my note-taking. Just
okay, you know, you just have all
She's
these...
crazy.
Rorschach.
Yeah, does this ink blot look like a hoop skirt to you?
It does.
Interesting.
Those ink blots look like a pair of Leno Blahniks, and that ink blot looks like really big hair. No, so
you know what you'd love? The flashback in Sex and the City 2 when it's the 80s.
Oh, boy.
I hate that movie.
Everyone does. Continue.
I also hate the first movie. I also think that show is not good.
What? Whoa! Slow down there, buckaroo!
I did watch
Stop
it a lot.
Stop peeking!
I did watch it a lot for a period, though. No, I think the reason why I don't think I'm alone on this one, and I think I've heard other gay men say the same thing, but, you know, I grew up with a lot of anxiety, particularly about my sexuality, and it took a long time for me to kind of be okay with it in a more general sense. And I think a lot of times these characters of these ridiculous women who more often, they can be really nice and sort of batty, or sometimes they're just like total like over the top monster bitches. But I find that sort of attractive and powerful in a way, just because it's like, wow, you A, don't give a shit about what the people around you really think, or you just don't notice, which is, I think, kind of equally good. And you're so self-realized and you're so clear in who you are and what you want. And I think that's so kind of powerful and attractive. And I was like, I would love to kind of try to take some of that into myself. So it's sort of like an Arrested Development. I love Lucille for that reason. And
I thought you were referring to yourself being in a state of Arrested Development.
I mean, that's the other kind of a therapist couch topic we can get into. But no, where it's like, yeah, she's mean and kind of dumb, and the things she says to people aren't nice, but it's like witty and interesting and funny, and you're just kind of like, wow, that would be kind of fun for like a day to be that character. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's why I love A Ridiculous Woman.
So is it like always because you like it's a thing that you, I don't know.
I think that's
is
where
it
started.
An aspirational or a relational thing?
I think it's like, a little bit of both.
Okay.
To a certain degree. And I think that's where it started. I'm not saying I necessarily want to become that person, but a part of me is like, wouldn't it be cool?
But like, is that always the case, or are there some RWs and RDs that are, that are like, that you still enjoy, but are that you don't have that relationship with of like, I love, like.
That's a good question.
That you relate to.
Probably, but I can't think of any right now.
Yeah.
Because I don't know that I
So is there anything else beyond your sort of personal, I guess, connection?
Oh.
Is it like, just a raw aesthetic?
I think,
perhaps, or,
you know, I love bold patterns and bright colors, and that's usually in the mix. I mean, I'm a magpie in that way, and in both in character form and in like an aesthetic form, they are something very shiny.
Yeah.
No, and I also just think on a very shallow level, they tend to be very funny, very watchable, very entertaining, even if they are horrible. I think, I'm sure there has been one or two that I've been like, yeah, all right. Like, and it's interesting actually that I feel like there's some of those that exist on, like, Real Housewives, which I watch with some regularity, but I don't like them for that same reason. And I think it's because in a fictional character, I'm like, okay, there's, like, a thing here that I can kind of get on board with as long as it's not entirely real and you're not a real person who feels this way.
Yeah.
About other people if you're being such a bitch or whatever. But when you see it in action on Real Housewives, it can be a little tough.
This might be hard to, like, to explore for you, but like, do you think there's a way that if or someone else was like trying to craft something specifically for you and like was like, I know that for Chris, I've got to put a ridiculous one in a ridiculous dress. Do you think that that could go awry really quickly?
Yes. Because
like, if I was to just like know that you're into that and like try to force it, do you think that it goes like, if you're aware of what you like, what it is?
Wait,
like,
I have a part two to this then also.
Yeah.
And I'm going to throw it out real quick before we start talking, just so we remember. My part two is there's an example in movies where something has gone too far for you in this archetype? So think about
that's
that.
That's a good follow-up. Because I was thinking, that was kind of where my question came from.
Yeah, okay. You wanted to know, like, if
but
it,
I wanted
like
to know,
what
like,
goes
yeah,
too
like,
far?
What, like, how do you think it could go wrong?
Yeah.
Because this is clearly
so, like,
a thing that happens in a lot of movies.
Such a good question.
So in a non-reality TV show
right.
perspective, has there ever been a woman who has just been too much for you that would otherwise follow this idea? I'm not sure if I can think of any off the top of my head.
Yeah,
really,
like, I just, okay, and this is also going to sound strange, especially for something, I think half of the character and what appeals to it is so based on artifice, that's where like the ridiculous dress part is coming in. So it's hard for me to explain this, but I think if it feels organic and it's like this character is batty and fun or whatever, then I'm into that. Mm-hmm. But if it does feel like it's just sort of like, well, we need to turn this all the way up to 11 at all times, I'm going to probably burn out on it. I mean, it's like, if you eat your favorite food every day, you're not going to enjoy it as much anymore. And that's what, to answer Brendan's question sort of at the same time, I'm sure there is, theoretically, and has been in the past, but I can't think of one necessarily.
Okay.
Because I feel like, from what I can say about how I feel about this topic and this thing in movies, is that I am probably the opposite, where I'm like, these are usually my least favorite things to see. And I think it comes from how our different stances on how we look at characters like this.
Yeah.
I look at it as like an embarrassment to my sex.
Okay, actually then, I think answer both of your questions a little bit better. Because I don't want it to necessarily, if the movie is just trotting them out to be like a minstrel show for women and it's like a clown of the female species, I'm not into that.
Yeah, see, that's the thing.
Like a really bad
it's...
rom-com?
Or like,
I'm trying to think
Catherine
of
Catherine
like,
Hagel character of your
right.
Time. Yeah. I mean, that I was trying to think of one, but that's a pretty
like
good
I would
catch
hate a Catherine Hagel character, but in that same Catherine Hagel movie, I might enjoy the like
her mother
or like the middle aged like bitch boss character or something like that,
or her snarky friend,
sassy friend with glasses, so she's unfuckable.
Yeah.
Right, but she's played by someone like
who's
unbelievably
gorgeous.
Beautiful.
Yes.
Like
what Matt would want you. Glasses, friend.
Just as like a quick sidebar, it blows my mind that like Judy Greer and like Zooey Deschanel played those characters for so long, and I was like, they're so beautiful.
I mean,
but
Judy Greer still kind of does.
Yeah,
like I think she's attractive, but she's not like conventionally gorgeous. You know,
yes, that's true.
Like she's kind of too quirky to be like a leading lady in a rom com. You know,
yeah.
Like unless it were like a legitimately funny one, she wouldn't fly like a frothy piece of nothingness.
I don't know who Judy Greer is.
Huh?
I don't know who Judy Greer is.
Arrested Development. You probably know if you saw her.
Yeah. Is she the one with the freckles and the curly hair? No,
no, that's Alia Shawkat.
Yeah. No, Judy Greer was George.
Say goodbye to these, Michael.
She always flashed, yeah.
Because it's the last time you're going to see him.
Put your shirt down, please.
No. Dick out, shirt off.
See, yeah. So, like, and I'm not saying that, like, every one of those characters is, but, like, for me, when I see a character like that, it just reminds me of how, like, that, like, every time anyone in the world sees a character like that, that's what they're going to think I'm like.
Right.
Because we share the same gender.
I guess.
And then it angers me.
I guess the line is, like, the entire cast of Sex and the City is for that gone too far for me.
Yeah.
Where it does feel like it's not fun anymore. It is, in fact, saying this is what women are, and here are the four rules that they can have.
And we've talked about on this podcast before about how I hate those movies. Like, women movies. Like, let's have
red wine and watch this movie together.
Ugh, I can't.
And I agree with you.
You've
I think
seen Bad Moms Christmas.
Oh, it bums me out so much that Catherine Hahn is in that. Bums me out
I'm sure
so
she
much.
She got a nice paycheck. You mean a movie that was greenlit, produced, and filmed in under a year has turned out to be not good?
Really?
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, because Bad Moms came out toward the end of last year, and
that's
this is
true.
A Christmas movie that was rushed into production. So, like,
it just
Kel Caprice.
Yeah, I know. But I do want to say I'm not a supporter of female roles that are necessarily like going too broad with them or making them too archetypal. So I think it's difficult for me to say in general, like, well, here's the line, but I can, like, Sex and the City, I think the line is crossed there, or like a lot of quote unquote chick flicks kind of are in the same direction.
Yeah. All right.
There's something also, I remember I was reading online this week, I can't remember where it was, where, like, people were just posing the question, like, why do people like Hocus Pocus? And one of the responses...
I want to share a headline about that, but you go first, and then I'll share about
it. So, like, I mean, there's the obvious, like, nostalgia, like, don't overlook that.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing that someone was saying is the fact that it's a movie that's predominantly about three women who are allowed to be, like, ridiculous and over-the-top and funny, and that's something that little girls don't always get to see in a movie. So, like, whether or not you like it, like, there are those three powerful, like, you know, women, like, at the front center of this movie. And, like, they're bad, but they're not, like, that bad.
And they're larger-than-life characters.
Yeah. And there's also a lot of good Halloween set dressing in that movie.
Yeah.
Like, it has a good Halloween feel, which helps,
too. But, like, I think it's, like, the larger-than-life thing is what keeps it from the message of, here is the life path for women kind of deal.
Can I share this, like, sentence that someone posted onto Facebook and it stuck out at me, and I was going to mention it to you guys.
I want to see, do I know who it is?
It's just, like, a quote from the article where it says, Hocus Pocus is not a good movie. It never has been, and no performative declaration of how much you love Hocus Pocus will ever change that.
Oof.
What a, like...
Scalding.
Whoa, calm down.
It's weird to me because, like, it's such a nothing movie. Like, I enjoy it a lot. But
chill
it's
out, EW.
How can this movie, like, incite that much, like, feeling in you one way or the other?
By the way, like, what is wrong? Like, what,
making these objective,
like,
angry
performatively
statements.
Performatively liking the movie, like... Just because if I go around saying how much I, like, love a movie doesn't mean that I'm being performative.
Yeah.
But it's like...
It's when you act it out.
Yeah.
I think...
It's so weird.
That was EW, too.
Yeah.
I'm sure that was this kind of thing of, like, well, here's what's getting clicks these days. And it's these, like...
Yeah.
No, but they're, like, these clickbaity articles where it's ostensibly, like... Burning a sacred cow.
Yeah.
You know what I
mean?
Well,
the headline is actually, but what if Hocus Pocus isn't a good movie? Ooh.
I mean, it also
I'm
so
scared.
You know that, right?
I know, right?
Like, to be fair, like, it was reviewed very poorly when it came out.
No one
it
wants to give
well
it an Oscar.
It
it's just a fun movie.
I enjoy the movie, but I will, like, there's a lot of problems with the movie.
By the way,
I
don't
watching it.
I don't particularly enjoy it all that much.
Yeah.
Like, I'm, like, all right with it. I saw it a bunch when I was a kid, but that's because it's, like, Meet the...
It was always on.
I was going to say Meet the Titans.
Yeah, it was like
Remember
Meet
the
Titans.
Remember Meet the Titans?
Meet the Titans.
Guys, did you know that in the 90s there was a movie called Meet the Titans?
It's a real deep cut. I don't know if you've heard about it.
Ryan Duckling was in it.
Ryan Duckling. But yeah, it's I'm not really a big defender of it, but, like, calm the fuck down.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah, no, it's like, I feel like most people will not, like, argue your point, right?
Yeah.
Like, they're not going to be like, no, it's a great movie, let me tell you why. I would be like, no, it's a fun movie. Like, it's entertaining. I enjoy watching it, but it's not, like... A great example of screenwriting.
It's not a hill I'm going to die on.
Yeah.
And it's no, like, I agree. My response would be like, calm the fuck down.
And I'm certainly not going to take to the comments section like EW seems to think I want to, of being, you know.
Anyway.
So,
do you want to...
Yeah, Lee.
Yeah.
Do you want to...
I think it's interesting that when you talk about your thing, I don't know if people, like... If I've sort of talked about my thing enough that it's, like, sort of self-evident or evident to anyone else.
Well, that's why we started with me, right?
Yeah.
Because mine's been front,
like,
and center this whole time.
I don't know. I feel like it might come together if generally what I, like, with what I say that I like in a lot of the things and how I push my fixes. But I think I'm, like, kind of the opposite of you, where I tend to be into, like, broody men. in particular, I mean, it's sort of like a hard thing to boil down to one element, I think, but, like, I think they're all in the same sort of, like, I don't know, side of a Venn diagram.
Mm-hmm.
And that Venn diagram has things like broody men, or, like, loners or outsiders or others or aliens, or just general, like, not focused on the character, but movies that center on isolation. Or stories that center on, like, isolation, or, like, being...
outside of the group.
Yeah. Not, like, or just,
not,
like...
Wait, so you mean, like, emotionally isolated, not, like, physically?
Emotional or physical
Okay,
isolation.
So you do, like, person thrown into the wilderness?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, yeah, that maybe. Like, there's a game that is not a good game that I play that I, like, I actually, well, like, it's, if we did a video game episode of this podcast, this would be the first game I would want to tackle. Called Lifeless Planet, and it's about an astronaut who's, like... All of his buddies, like, you know, crashed or whatever, and he's the only one left alive. And their mission was to go on this, like, you know, 100-year-long mission to find, like, life on another planet. And he gets there, and it is lifeless. However, he stumbles on, like, power lines, and there's, like, a dead Soviet town that looks like it's been there for, like, hundreds of years. And that's, like, the premise for this game. And it's, like, just him and, like, a bunch of, you know, Russian sort of artifacts. And he's sort of sifting, and he's trying to find a way to, like, you know, like, let anyone know that he's, like... You know, he's got nothing else to do. What else is he going to do? And he's, like, alone by himself, and he has no real hope of getting home.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also some stuff with his, like, he's got, like, a sort of backstory where it kind of goes into why he went on this mission. And part of it is that his wife is dead, and it was kind of like, well, what else am I going to do with my life? Because my wife's gone. I have no one else. I'm the perfect candidate for this mission where I can never come back to Earth. And, like, it's not a good game. It's like the same shit over and over again. It's like jump, jump, jump. Walk around.
Mm-hmm.
There's no challenge in it. The story's flawed towards the end, and some of the sci-fi elements are interesting, but then some are really flawed. But, like, I would play that game again, and I think I've played it at least twice. I've at least, like, beaten it and then gone back and done certain parts. Because it really nails that theme, that, like, feeling. Like, it nails a feeling of just being, like, I don't know, alone. I guess The Martian is similar, too. But
yeah.
The Martian is, like... Because it's not necessarily a hopeless or a bleak feeling, it's just that feeling of, like, being alone. And being in this sort of, like, desperate situation. Or not really desperate so much as, like, because it's almost, like, so extreme that you can't really feel that desperate anymore.
Is it also, like, in those situations, like, the search for hope or trying to, like, build
hope? I mean, I think hope is connected to it. Like, I don't think it's, I think it can go either way. I don't generally, like, I don't really like sad stories in general, but I think I'm okay with, that feeling of, like, where everything is hanging.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It could go really badly or really, or maybe it could go well. But yeah, with the loner thing, I do generally gravitate towards any character in a story who is, like, the outsider or, like, the one that's sort of, like, you, it's, in particular, the one that seems to, like, be, like, an observer or, like, an, like, someone above everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
Not, like, socially or, like,
right.
Priority-wise, but just, like,
it's out
just,
of
like,
the frame. Out of the,
yeah.
What are some movies about broody dudes?
Broody dudes?
I like broody, by the way, I like broody singers a lot, too. A lot of the bands I like are, like, you know, like, folk dude, like, broody, sad men on guitars. Like, what's his name? Brian Fallon from Gaslight Anthem.
Yeah.
And Frank Turner, who does, like, happy stuff, but also does broody stuff. So it carries into music as well. But, like, so movies, I'm going to start with a weird one because I haven't seen this movie, but I know that I would like. It's called, like, the, like, I forget what it's called, but there's a movie that I've really, it's been on my list to see for a long time, about, like, a caveman who's been alive for hundreds and hundreds of years, and he's a college professor.
Ego.
No.
Okay.
Shut up. And he, it's just, like, a very talky, 1 hour movie, and, like, it's not, like, not, that, it's, like, an hour and a half, but
what
it's,
is
like,
this movie called?
Encino Man.
It's not Encino Man. Shut up. It's called, like, The Last Man on Earth or something.
I've never heard of this movie.
I haven't either.
Hold on.
At least not for
this. I always forget the name of it, and that's why I haven't seen it. I'll find it later, but it's a movie where, like, it's this college professor who's retiring, and he's having a retirement party. And then it comes out during his retirement party with all of his other professors from different disciplines that, like, the reason he's retiring is not because he's, like, getting older, it's because he's, like, not going to die, and he has to, like, kill his identity and make a new one because he's done this hundreds of times because he's immortal. And they're all
what?
Like, what? And he says, like, yeah, like, I'm a caveman and I can't die. Like, he's been around since, like, as long as he could, like, as long as the Earth has been.
When was this movie made?
Like, 2010 or something. Oh. It's, like, a small indie, like, sort of talky drama. And it sounded really, like, I saw that and I was like, that's something I gotta see.
You do seem to like a supernatural element attached to it,
I
right?
I do like a lot of that, yeah.
So, like, that's why I think the idea of immortality seems to be a really compelling one.
Yeah, I mean, I love Doctor Who a lot for that reason, I think. I really like the character of the Doctor, and I like that he is, or for a long time in the new series, was, like, the last of his kind as well. And didn't have a whole lot of other people to relate to on that level. And I liked it more when he went to forums, like, 11 and 12, that were more embracing of the fact that they were not, like, a 10 and to some extent 9 were doctors that I think were, like, more connected to humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And then 11 and 12 were more, like, they would compartmentalize, like, yeah, we have some of the same things in common, but, like, you don't understand my point of view on
right.
this because I'm alien. Or there was, like, one of the 12 episodes I really liked has this element where there's, like, this, critical decision that has to be made about the fate of the Earth, and they're all like, what should we do, Doctor? And he's like, it's not my planet, like, it's up to you, this is your history, like, it's not for me to interfere with this. And they got, like, mad at him. Clara got, like, pissed, because he didn't help, but if in his mind it was like, well, I can't.
Right.
It's not my decision to make. Which I thought was interesting.
So there's, like, an ambiguity to the morals in that situation that you find kind of attractive, too?
Well, just, like, being so... Just, like, the idea of someone who isn't, like... It's just on a different level. Not,
yeah.
like, a bad or like, a worse or better level. Just, like, it's different.
A parallel but separate one.
Yes. Like, there's just someone that operates on different rules that aren't necessarily, like, morally superior or inferior to us. But just having that sort of otherness where you can never fully relate to... another thing. You know what I mean?
Now, would you like to lay down in the therapy couch?
Yeah,
and
I mean,
let us take notes.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's like pretty much how I feel about like I mean, I'm sure we all feel like this.
Yeah.
And it's presumptuous of me to be like I'm the one that's really different from everyone else. But like
I
relate a lot to that feeling,
yeah.
And I relate a lot to feeling like the other, and maybe some of it is from like asexuality. I don't know. I don't think so, and I don't really care. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I kind of also like being the observer a lot of times versus the participator in things. A lot of the characters that I've made were, like, based on that facet of myself, too.
Made in D&D, you mean?
Not in D&D, but, well, some, but, like, more
as
in,
a
like,
writer?
Yeah, as a, like, a story, you know, in stories that I've not written, but want to write, or have started but never finished, things like that. There was, like, a whole, I mean, in college, I think I wrote a whole pilot episode about a character who, like, he didn't have an identity. He, like, walked, he was like, a drifter.
Mm.
And yeah, so yeah, that's definitely my thing. And it's usually men, probably because, unlike you, when I was growing up, like, all the characters I liked were men, and so that's how I, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because of course they would, because there's nothing for you if you're a woman.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's a little bit different now, but like, yeah, I think if you, like, especially from just my personal, I think there's a lot of good female protagonists now who I still don't relate to because I'm just not that feminine in general.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there are a lot of good ways to do female protagonists who are still, like, distinctly feminine presenting and in a lot of their personality and tastes. And that's still not me.
Right.
Like, I'm still more of, like, some straight guy that won't talk about his emotions to his friends, like, than I am, like, a lot of the, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I have a lot of stereotypically, I think, like, not bro-y, but, like, guy traits, I think. And that's why I relate a lot more to, I think, those characters. And why a lot of the characters I create in D&D, I mean, most of them are guys.
That's why it's the opposite for me.
I know. So, I mean, sometimes they'll do a girl. I did a girl in Halo, because, like, your character doesn't really have any, your gender has no impact on the character in that game, so why not? But I just, yeah, that's my thing, I think.
Yeah. That's cool. Now we come to Brendan.
I don't know what to tell you for a whole lot, honestly. Like, we were talking about this on Facebook and how, like, this was a thing
I could not explain it in a way.
This was a thing we wanted to do. And, like, I got what you were saying, but I don't think I have really a thing that falls under this category. Like, there's not, like, a thing, like, you would... I don't know. I feel like if there was a movie about, like, a ridiculous woman or something, like, would you seek this movie out, Chris?
Potentially.
Okay, see, because that's, I guess, what I don't have, right? Like, there are things, like, I like certain directors and I like certain actors, and, like, yeah, like, if David Fincher's doing a movie, like, I'll probably go see that movie because I like him a lot. But it's not something like, ooh, this is my weak spot, David Fincher. It's more like he's proven himself and I generally like what he does, but, like, if he still did a project that I had no interest in, I would probably not see it. Like, it's not that big of a thing for me that this would be, like, overriding any other semblance of logic in my head for me to say, I still want to see this.
I guess it's less that and just more, like, is there, like, an archetype or an element that you find attractive, even if you're not going to see that thing?
I mean, a little.
Like,
so, like
especially so.
Like, what we kind of hit upon was like, musicals, and I think that's the closest I could come to having something to say for this, because it's a little true, but it's not quite true. Like, I'm not going to see every musical. Like, I simply don't care to. I don't like a lot of Rodgers and Hammerstein stuff, which I know was very, like, important in terms of history. And, you know, for the time, it was very revolutionary. But, like, it's just something I don't care about. Like, I've watched some of it. I don't think Oklahoma is all that interesting to me. Like, I can appreciate from a historical perspective. But, like,
I think
the
musical
is
super boring.
Yeah, it's a woman churning butter when we open on stage. So it's just, you know what you're getting into. But... So I don't know. Like, yeah, I think I'm generally more inclined to see a movie if it's a musical. Like, I'm probably going to see
Barnum.
Barnum's the stage show that this is not based on.
Oh,
probably,
sorry.
Like, Hugh Jackman owns a circus or whatever it's called.
We Bought a Circus.
Yeah, yes, Hugh Jackman's We Bought a Circus. Like, I'll probably see that, even though, like, and I guess this falls under, because, like, I'm really not, because it's the songwriters are Pasek and Paul, who did La La Land, which I did not care for. I've heard two of the songs. The songs are exactly what I thought they would be. If you were to say, like, the two guys who did La La Land and these other musicals you've heard, Dear Evan Hansen, Christmas Story.
So, like, basic, uncreative.
They're very poppy. And, like, I listen to it, and I'm like, well, that's fine. Like, I don't object to any of this, but I'm also not interested in any of this. And so I'll probably see it, because it's a musical.
I think that's probably it, because I think, like, what we're saying is, like, this is the thing that, like, when you hear about it, it makes you sit up in your chair, I guess.
Yeah.
Like, oh, they're doing... That's
so,
interesting.
I mean, but also, I think part of that is the fact that, and we covered this when we did La La Land, is that there aren't that many musicals made in the first place. So, yeah. like, it's harder to say, like, it's almost like you can't afford to be picky, mm-hmm. where it's like, you know, if you don't go see this Hugh Jackman Barnum musical, they won't make musicals anymore because they'll think people don't want to see them. And so it's like, that is how studio executives think. And so it's almost like, well, I guess I have to see it because otherwise it's not going to be financially successful. And then no one will want to do, like, a musical that I will want to see someday.
So it's almost, it's like, you're paying it forward.
Right. Like,
into the hypothetical musical.
And that's only... That only applies to film, though, right? Like, people make musicals all the time.
Yeah, on stage? Yeah. So, I mean, if we're talking stage, I mean, yeah, again, like, not all musicals. Hashtag not all musicals.
Yeah.
Like, there, you know, there are things, like, I've heard great things about Dear Evan Hansen. I don't really care.
I don't feel compelled to see that
show like,
at all.
I will see, because the kid who played,
Sorry, all I can think about is the Scott Aukerman thing.
Yeah. the kid who played, Barnaby in Hello Dolly is going to be in Dear Evan Hansen starting, I think, at some point next year. And I would see that because I liked him in Hello Dolly a lot. But, like,
but it's
I just
for him,
care.
Not for, like...
Yeah, and I mean, it's like, I see it because people have said, like, this is a very good show. It won Best Musical, it won so many Tonys, so it's sort of like, well, okay, like, there must be something to it.
Well, I don't think it applies as much to, like, stage, if you're saying that, like, music or musicals are what grabs you when it comes to movies, because, like... Musicals are just a thing in stage. Like,
right.
They're just a thing that you do.
Right.
And so, like, it's not really indicative of any of the content.
Right.
Whereas, like, in movies, it's less common that, like, there will be song and dance in them.
Right. And I mean, but it also comes down to the idea that, like, musical shouldn't be a genre in terms of movie. Because, like,
right.
it's still... Because like, that's what bugs me about the Golden Globes, how they have... The category is best musical or comedy, as if to say, like, musicals and comedies are the same thing.
Yeah.
Which they're not. So that's why you could potentially have, like, a comedy and Sweeney Todd in the same
right.
category at the Golden Globes.
Which makes
being, like,
no sense.
Yeah, like, how do we compare these two? Like, you can't.
Which also, even if you had two separate musicals, let's say it was Sweeney Todd and, I don't know, if you mean Chicago.
Right.
I feel like those are... Different,
right.
very
I mean,
different
to
genres,
fair,
even within musicals.
I like that the Golden Globes breaks it down to like to comedy and drama, which I think is a good thing. It just bugs me that they throw like musicals in with comedy.
I'm just pleased the Golden Globes ever gives awards to comedies.
Yeah, no, I am too. Because otherwise, like again, like it would be like the Oscars, where comedies are never ever recognized. So like, I like the fact that they go out of their way to be like, we have a light one and we have a serious
right.
one. It just bugs me that musicals are thrown in with light ones.
Yeah,
automatically.
No, it's bullshit.
Yeah, anyways, but the idea is that. If I'm interested in, like, the story that a musical is telling, then yeah, I'll seek it out. If I'm not interested, then no, I just don't care.
Hmm.
Like, Dear Evan Hansen, it's a lot about, like, you know, like, angsty teens and, like, high school troubles. And, like, this would have probably maybe grabbed me, like, 10, 15 years ago. If this had come out when I was in high school, yeah, I'd probably be really into it. But as of right now, it's just sort of like, eh.
Do you also feel, and this is going to be a slight sidebar, that Dear Evan Hansen is so painfully hyped that I cannot imagine it's as good as people keep saying it is?
I mean, it's partially that. And again, it's partially just because, like, I've heard other Pasek and Paul songs. And,
right.
Like, I think they're at best fine. I've heard the stuff they did for Christmas Story, and, like,
it's
that's
okay.
fine.
Yeah.
I thought some of the songs on La La Land were okay, and, like, maybe if City of Stars was sung by someone other than Ryan Gosling, I would be like, okay, I'd like to listen to this song. Yeah. So... I don't know. It is probably just that it's been so hyped up to me.
It might also just be, to go back to the general topic, that it's just a different way that you're approaching these things. Do you know what I mean? Like, it was very easy for Lee and I to each identify what our quote-unquote thing was.
Yeah.
But you struggled with that, and I think it's just because we were approaching it in way A, and you're approaching it in way B. And
I mean, maybe. I'm really not sure that there is a thing for me in that
to
sense.
To give you an example of, like, when you're saying it's more, like, nuanced than whether or not you're interested in something, like, oh, I like David Fincher, therefore I sit up when he does something, but only if it's a subject matter that I care about. Mm. Like, it's, like, a sort of, like, chain. I've played all the David Cage games, which include, like, Indigo Prophecy and Heavy Rain. Actually, I didn't play Beyond Two Souls because I didn't have a PS3 when it first came out. They are all equally compelling and then ultimately terrible with their endings.
They can never,
however,
can never stick the landing.
Every time he starts making a new game, I'm like, yeah, I want this. Like, so it's like, and it's not even subject matter. Like, in the latest instance, Detroit Become Human is, like, again, I'm right up my alley because it's about, like, androids who gain sentience. And, like, the first trailer that came out really made me sit up because the choice storytelling looked really compelling, but also because of, like, the way that you were basically a police android who was negotiating with a rogue android who had, like, a child hostage over a roof. And, like, some of the... One of the lines that was, like, super, like, fuck, I hate this game, was when he was, like, saying, like, I'll kill you if you come any closer, and the android's response when you say truth is, like, you can't kill me, I'm not alive. And I was like, that sounds like, I was like, I have to get this game. But yeah, like, it's, and so yeah, there was subject matter that grabbed me there, because for sure that character is like right up, it fits in that sort of other outsider, like, you know, different, like, alien sort of
thing. That other shoe's going to drop in the third act.
I know the game, like, I'm fully expected to, but that doesn't mean I'm not there for the rest of it. Like, yeah. Like, Heavy Rain was 2/3 of a solid mystery story. And Integral Prophecy was 2/3 of a, like, a solid sort of, I mean,
sci-fi-ish
mystery, and then ultimately sci-fi, and then the internet got involved, and that was terrible.
Yeah.
Spoilers for Indigo Prophecy. The internet's alive.
So, if I can just ease my way down from this high horse that I'm seated upon, and if you two would just like to scooch over on this couch and make some room for me,
okay.
Who wants to psychoanalyze my things?
Well,
or lack thereof?
I guess I want to, well, what I want to know, because I mean, there's two parts to this. I want to know why you like musicals in general, but, like, also I want to talk about the apple.
Okay.
Because...
That was your go-to.
It was my go-to, because
this.
I was like, first it was going to be Tommy, but I think Tommy has legitimate critical things. Tommy drives me up a fucking wall. The movie of it, I can't stand it.
So, okay, but again...
And to be fair, I'm on Brendan's side for
the
apple.
But I think there are legitimate good things about Tommy.
Because the other thing I was going to say about Tommy is, even I find the movie version to be bizarre. Like, I don't think it's a good movie. I think it's an interesting movie, but, like, I don't think it's always good.
Yeah.
So, like, I'm not going to argue with you if you say, like, this movie is fucking ridiculous, I can't stand it. I would be like, I see why you couldn't.
That's not necessarily my problem with Tommy, but, like, The Apple is, I think, a solid example of, like, a movie that you guys love to, like, watch and know is bad, whereas I, like... pull my hair out every time.
See,
I have to sit through it.
So the apple, and the other thing is, again, with the apple, I will agree with you. Like, I think the movie runs out of steam. Like even in terms of, like, a perverse, like, bad enjoyment, I think it runs out of steam
around
at some
the
point
middle.
After the song Speed. Like, it's kind of a slog to the end from that point on for me.
I legit kind of love the song Speed.
I,
like,
actually,
I think it's kind
Speed
of great.
Is, like, one of the songs that's actually, like, if I heard that on the radio, I'd be like, oh, this is a fun song.
Right.
But, like, if you tell me you're bored by that, I would be like, yeah, I can definitely see why you would be bored by this.
Yeah.
Like, the movie, I think, like, it's a lot of fun and goofiness in the beginning, and then it becomes, like, a fairly trite story about, like, you know, a
wow.
boy and a girl trying, like, falling out of love and, like, blah, blah, blah. Like,
but also the Bible.
Yeah.
I guess for me, I know it's very terrible, but there's something so open and available and joyous about how stupid it is. Like, it's not trying to be intelligent at all, and there's something that's just sort of enjoyable about that.
I don't know that it's not trying to say something. Like, it is.
Do you think?
Oh, 100%. I think this movie thinks it's saying something significant about the human condition, or, like... like, analoging the Bible to modern day. I 100%
I thought the...
think that the writers of this movie thought they were saying something clever.
Yeah,
wow.
I mean, when was it made?
Yeah, 81.
Okay. I mean, either way, whatever drug was around at the time, so maybe cocaine.
Coke.
That's
Coke.
What
Coke.
It was,
Coke.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, it, someone got...
Speed!
Yeah. Well, someone took a lot of drugs and was like, oh, I'm making a real big point here.
Yeah, well, the other thing is, when, like, going off of your point, is it was originally written for the stage as, like, a very straightforward parallel of Adam and Eve.
And it was
and a
4-hour musical sung all in Hebrew.
Yeah. So
and
like,
then a producer was like, nah, let's change this up.
Yeah, so if you're telling me you think that those people weren't trying to say something with their 4-hour, like, thoroughly sung musical, I will thoroughly disagree with you.
It sounds a lot like...
I think it probably had something to say in the beginning. I think where it landed.
I mean, I'm not going to say it didn't get watered down, but I'm saying that at the time they probably thought they were doing something.
Yeah.
So, I guess this part...
And also,
of
I'm sorry, just like to go why I do like it, though. I appreciate the absurdity of the fact that they, in 1981, thought people in 1994 would still love disco music, and they thought it would be a way of the future. Like, I love the fact that, like, a movie could, like, swing and miss so horribly when it comes to predicting what the future is like.
Yeah.
Like, what music would be like, what people would wear. Like, it's just,
like,
absurd hubris.
Interestingly, there are, like, is a song contest, right?
Yeah, but Eurovision had existed by that point, though.
Yeah,
too.
I guess Eurovision existed.
So, like,
this is
clearly, like, World Vision, right?
Yeah.
So it's, you know, Eurovision, but much bigger.
There's also, like, bits and pieces.
Well,
of...
I was thinking about shows like American Idol.
Yeah.
That
no, that's
popular.
True. That's true.
There are also bits and pieces of, even if the entire song I don't care for, there's, like, parts of one I'll really like. Like, the lyrics.
All right, so
the title song is horrible.
Of the music in The Apple is terrible.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, I don't like a lot of the music in a lot of musicals. Mm-hmm. And, like, for me, I enjoy a musical when... under certain conditions, and, like, I think top of the list is, like, is the music enjoyable for me? And it often isn't. So I guess I want to know about the apple in particular, and then, like, I want to get deeper into this with other musicals, is, like, do you enjoy the music in The Apple, and or would you ever listen to it outside of
I like about half of the music in The Apple.
I like three songs in The Apple.
I like, again, it's a very front-loaded show for me, so I like most of the songs in the beginning, and then when it gets to, like, Coming, or, you know, her like, fucking...
Coming
moments,
for You?
Yeah. Yeah, her fucking lament that she sings when she, like, wants Handy back.
It's like, Oh, Alfie or something.
Yeah, Alfie. Obviously.
Or, I think it's literally just called I'm Crying.
No, I don't think
Or it something is. Like that.
I have it on my phone. I have the soundtrack on my phone. So if your question was, do I like to listen to this outside of the context of the movie, the answer is resounding, yes, I do.
I mean, honestly, as much as I like a lot of musicals, aside from, currently, the Bad Out of Hell musical soundtrack that I have, the cast recording...
It's called Cry For Me.
Okay. I don't really listen to songs from musicals, even that I did enjoy, outside of the musical, because they have no purpose to me outside of the narrative. Like, I liked... what's the one with Zachary Levi that we just saw?
She Loves Me.
I like She Loves Me, and I liked the song.
Or Shepherd in the Corner?
It's called She Loves Me.
No. Still called She Loves Me.
Okay.
The story it's come from is that's the
yeah that's what it's from, based yeah. upon.
Thank you.
Yeah, I like She Loves Me, and I liked the musical of Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. But for me, the music holds no interest on its own. Like, it's a nice augment to the story that I'm watching, but it's not music that I would choose to listen to. And I don't know why. Like, I think the music that I choose to listen to has to be. I don't know if it's about being, like, applicable. I mean, Bad Out of Hell, the musical, is a little bit different because a lot of those songs were already written. And it's not like they... By the way, again, not technically a Chick-fil-A musical because it was originally conceived as a musical, but we'll ignore that one.
Die on that hill.
however, like, I... A lot of the... I just like the music. I mean, I feel probably...
Can I suggest something?
Yeah.
So, you have said before that lyrics aren't always a big thing for you.
They're not.
Like, you can overlook them completely if they're a name. So, I think a lot of it might have to do with the fact that... A lot of songs in theater are ostensibly building upon a story, and therefore the lyrics are very important in terms of what it is they're trying to convey. And so if you're looking for just sort of, like, nothingness in your lyrics, that might be why you don't.
Well,
I'm not saying you're seeking out it, but I'm saying, like, there's a very clear, definite... In theory, there's a very clear, definite story being told if you were to listen to a cast report.
Yeah, I think the opposite is true. I think that a lot of musical... Especially, like, if it's... I guess more like Sondheim-y, that the lyrics are too specific that when they're not in the story, that they don't make a whole lot of sense to me as a song.
No, that's true. That's why, I mean, again, a lot of it for me is listening to, like, the overall thing. It would be, because, you know, again, like with Sondheim, like, if you were to take a song from, I don't know, A Little Night Music or something, and be like, here, listen to this. You'd be like, who are these people? Why are they singing this? What is this about? Yeah. Why do I care? And that would be a very fair reaction to have, because, like, a lot of his work, why I love his work, lies in its specificity. So if you take that out entirely out of context and you know nothing about it, I can see why you would listen to it and be like, why do you care? Like, what is this?
So do you never just... Because you just said you would listen to, like, the whole thing. Do you never just, like, put a thing on random?
No, I do. But, again, also, I know the story where it's coming from.
See, so
you're kind
know,
of
like,
accessing that.
Yeah, and if your question earlier was why do I like musicals?
Yeah.
Again, I don't think it's... again, this goes back to the whole, like, thing about musical as a genre. It's musical as a way to tell a story. And I think which is why about too many people are like, oh, I don't like musicals because it's not realistic. Nothing is realistic. It's all fictional. So, like... For me, it's just one way of telling a story, and I never want to rule out a way of telling a story, whether it's live theater, whether it's a movie, whether it's music, whatever it is, I'm open to whatever it is that you have to say. So I like musicals because I like the way people choose to tell stories. I like the songs in musicals a lot of the time because I like storytelling, and I find storytelling interesting. I find the way you convey information interesting. I find the way of how you can very, very specifically fit all this into the context of a song to be interesting. Like, it's like puzzle making, where you have to fit all of this into, you know, 5 minutes, and you have to do it ideally very, like, cleverly. It should rhyme. There should be some sort of meter to it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why, like, I find it almost impressive in a way.
Okay.
Neat. That was a nice little speech.
Thank you.
Well, yeah.
I have it written on my phone.
Again, I'm very specific about the musicals I like, because if they don't like the music at all, like, if it's a fucking chore to listen to, which it often is, then I'm not there for it. And even if it is, a lot of the times, outside of the musical, the music is not that compelling to me. Because I think I listen to a lot of, like, again, music with, like, big themes and broad moods. So much so that my Spotify is filled with like about 20 mood playlists right
yeah.
now.
I mean, that's like the you're the opposite of me in that sense, because I care a lot about specific context. You care about how it makes you like
yeah.
how it is in that moment.
I use music to think about my own shit.
Yeah.
And so like
it would probably hurt your purposes to focus in on lyrics a lot of the time.
Yeah, it does, because on some of my story playlists I do have songs with words in them, but like I have to tune them out because they like it's frankly like sometimes the sound of like a shitty pop punk song is like appropriate for the story, but like also the lyrics are not great and like whiny or terrible, and I don't want that to infect the character that I'm thinking about or the story that I'm thinking about. So yeah.
So does everyone feel like they just got like a little spoonful of therapy?
I feel
no.
like a whole new man. I'm gonna get back on my high horse and ride out of here and watch Stranger Things. Yeehaw.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys so much.
You're
for
welcome.
Sharing your things
crisp
with us.
45 minutes.
A crisp,
yeah.
crisp 45 minutes. Yeah, we will see our...
2 weeks, Constantine, 2005.
Yeah.
2005.
Yep.
Good job.
We'll buy it out.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye.